Hey, it's the Andy Social Podcast, episode 224. 224. Whoa, Larry in the background. He's excited as well. This week's guest is Luke Penman. He is the managing director of Play Pause Play. That's playpauseplay.com. Imagine saying that really fast. Play Pause Play, Play Pause Play, Play Pause Play, Play Pause Play. Yeah, okay, anyway. Sorry, just amusing myself there. Play Pause Play is a radio station that's dedicated to Adelaide music, South Australian music. Luke is extremely passionate about music. He has spent a lot of time in the local music scene and has lent his skills to creating a platform that highlights some of the amazing music that comes out of that part of the country. So if you're not from Adelaide or not from that region, this might not immediately identify with you. However, if you're psyched and passionate about discovering new music in general, and you're really passionate about local music and original music and independent music as well, this is a really cool episode, and it might be worth having a little look-see at Play Pause Play as well and see what Luke has been up to. He's put in a lot of time, he's invested a hell of a lot into this, and all for a fantastic cause. Now, a little bit of a shout out and a credit goes to Jake Clark, previous guest on the podcast, I think episode 216, I think. Jake is the science communicator, astronomy PhD candidate, and an all-round legend, and he suggested Luke to be on the podcast. So he brought us together, and Luke was absolutely fantastic, very hospitable as well, brought a few crafty beers along to break the ice and lube us up a bit to have a great conversation, which we certainly did. And finally, before we kick into this episode, Luke is the last of a group of Adelaide legends that I've put on the podcast or recorded earlier this year. I went over to Adelaide in the beginning of the year and just bulk recorded a whole stack of episodes. So far this year, I don't even have the list in front of me, so I'm not even going to try and attempt it because I will miss somebody. But I bulk recorded a stack of episodes, and Luke is the last in a long list of legends that I got on the podcast so far this year. And no doubt I'll be back in Adelaide soon, so I will find a whole stack more amazing people to talk to. But Luke is the last, better late than never, mate. And here we go. Playpauseplay.com. Please enjoy this great chat with Luke Penman.
Oh, just what I'm about to burp.
Yeah, I know.
There we go.
I thought it was such a great idea to bring some beers and then realize that we're going to be recording audio and it's not always pleasant.
I tell you what, this podcast is great. Like, I've met so many great people, but usually the best way to meet people is over a beer. And it's very stereotypical, and there'll be a lot of people I know that listen to this podcast that don't drink at all, and they're like, come on, Andy, you can have a great conversation without the beer. But it's like this little extra added sort of pleasure that's attached to it. And it works really well if you don't have too many. But I've certainly had some podcasts over the years where maybe I've hit the fourth person in the day and I've already had social drinks with the first three. And by the time the fourth person's come along, I'm like, oh man, I'm struggling now. And you think you're in the zone, you're having a great chat. And then later on you listen back and go, oh, well, I think it goes out there. I'll just put it out.
I remember talking to a local artist years ago and he told me four pints before, and we're talking Adelaide pints, schooners elsewhere.
Okay, that's right. Not imperial pints.
No. Before going on stage, pints was the right amount to loosen up a bit, but not be too over. And if it goes over that, it's wrong. What about yourself?
It's a very fine line.
Yeah.
It's a very fine line because if you tip over that, it's all over. Yeah, look, if it's a schooner, so thinking New South Wales sort of lingo, four would be okay. But I think nowadays, like, I keep catching myself out saying old person things, but the older I get, the more I realize that I'm affected by it a lot more.
Yeah.
So I usually find, and it's probably because I don't drink as consistently as I used to. And I think, as a result, when I do drink, it does hit me a bit more. So, four would be the threshold. I think anything beyond that, you're really playing with fire. And I've certainly done that. I've danced in it. I've rolled in it. I've had to get the emergency fire blanket out at times. But it's hard because it's such a hard thing as well for anybody who's going to get up on stage, whether it be music or comedy or anything, is to, or public speaking, is to get in front of people, and you're being judged, you're being looked at and observed for a whole range of different reasons. And people use all sorts of different methods to overcome it, you know, and booze is, well, look, it shouldn't be encouraged, but I can understand why people do it, and it can be effective, but it is, it can be dangerous as well. And I see people just absolutely abusing it.
Mm, definitely.
Yeah.
There was a festival in Adelaide in the Clare Valley. So it's about an hour outside of the city.
Yep.
Called Blenheim Fest. It used to run every year. It hasn't for the past couple of years. It's on someone's farmland, and they haven't for a couple of years just to let the land restore.
Okay.
Yep. So it is, I'm sure it's a one night festival, but they encourage you to bring your tent so that you can camp.
Okay.
And drive home in the morning. But it's also a BYO festival.
Right.
Okay. So I've only been to one. They got in touch with me and they asked me to MC one of the stages.
Okay.
So talking about the public speaking aspect of it, they took incredible care of me, and they had like an artist bar backstage that was between the two stages. So I could get on stage, introduce a band, have a beer, get on stage, back announce the band.
I see where this
finish
is going.
My beer. But I would think I got lucky that day.
Yeah.
I think I was a drink or two behind most of the crowd.
Good.
So I got to get on stage. I got to yell and scream. I got to pump everyone up and just throw to some incredible band who would, and all, everyone's ready to dance. Everyone's ready to jump around. It's an amazing time.
Did you find that sort of as you rolled into the afternoon and evening, each band continues on, that you found that you were trying new things, getting a little bit looser on stage, go, oh, I'm going to be a little bit more animated this next one?
My worst habit is swearing.
Oh, right. Okay.
And I absolutely will just start swearing on stage people react to it, I think.
Yeah.
And it, you know, gets reaction, it gets a cheer. And I think when I'm swearing, not that I should, again, it's bad of me to do so, but when I'm up there and I'm trying to explain how passionate and excited I am about live music and about community and about bringing people together, sometimes it just comes out, and I want people to feel like I'm being me on stage.
Yeah.
To be able to do that. And if I was talking one-to-one, there'd be a few swear words in there. So,
well, I'll give you the assurance that you're more than welcome to swear as much as you want on here. Like, just fucking let it rip, man. Like, you're more than welcome. There's no rules here. So look, I mean, we've got a mutual acquaintance, a mutual friend that threw your name into the bucket and said, hey, you should have a chat to this guy. I've done a little bit of poking around, but I mean, what's the background? I mean, you seem to be pretty entrenched in sort of the local music area, and as you said, like, you know, getting up and sort of doing some MC work as well to present some talent. I mean, what's I don't know. You can do the elevator pitch. You can tell me the whole story from front to back. What's the go?
Many years ago, I simply made a conscious decision to get into Adelaide music. That I just went, I want to know what's out there. I want to delve into it. Somewhere along the way, I remember listening to, there's a community radio station here called 3D.
Okay.
And it feels like every time I tune in, it's some lo-fi DIY slacker rock.
Okay. Yeah.
And there's been times in my life and bands that do that kind of thing that connect to me and it works.
Yep.
But it also just occurred to me one day that there are people who listen exclusively to that. And they cannot stand anything else. It just doesn't work. And I think metalheads, for example, is actually possibly absolutely a better example of this. But
guilty.
What I felt was that the music that you like and the music that you feel connected to, the music that you think is good, is music that's familiar to you.
Yep.
You're significantly more likely to enjoy a song that you know than you are a song that you don't, regardless of genre or quality or whatever, the first time you hear it or whatever. So by entrenching myself within the South Australian music scene, that quality of emerging bands, the quality of music, the oral quality that I was hearing became my new normal. And so anything polished, anything international, anything, again, no matter how objectively good it was, I didn't care because it wasn't what I was involved in. I remember someone telling me years ago that, I think it was a major record label, talking about major radio stations or commercial radio stations, and the guy from the label saying basically the stations will play whatever we tell them to, and we know that people will buy it because they hear it on the radio. Mm. And that's the cycle. That's how it all goes. So part of it for me was delving into the local scene, getting to know all of the local bands, seeing some really, really good shit, and realizing that no one else is hearing these bands. So I wanted to share that. I wanted to make sure that other people were hearing those bands. I think that it's vitally important for us in South Australia to celebrate the great music that we have here, because no one else is going to do it for us.
Well, I think, I mean, especially my domain's definitely metal, metal and hard rock. And we've been, like, my band's been really fortunate to play in Adelaide quite a few times over the years, and we played most places, although I was just talking to someone about half an hour ago, we were joking because there's a gig on at Crown and Anchor tomorrow night, and I laughed and said, of all the years I've been travelling here, I've never been there before, and I went and had a beer there today.
Yeah.
And I was trying to work out, like, where are the bands playing here? It must be somewhere in the back, I've got no idea, but yeah. I'm going to go there tomorrow night and suss it out. But we've been lucky to play a lot of the great venues, and we've met so many amazing bands, and there's such a great scene, even just in that heavier music sort of subgenre of music itself. And I think the common theme that I see amongst just even just that clique of musicians and artists is that there is a, I mean, it's probably the same in most places, but it's just this real sense of community.
Mm.
And it's this just lift everybody up. And it's, and look, there's always going to be interpersonal dramas and all sorts of stuff along the way where, you know, there's going to be some friction. But I think ultimately it's just, I mean, maybe it's partly that Adelaide's like a big country town as well. It's a city, but it's got that country town vibe, which definitely is super cool. But yeah, I've always got that vibe from Adelaide and always been attracted to it as well. But when you sort of made that decision to sort of, I guess, make that effort to sort of look into, well, what is around me? What is local and what am I listening to? Do you think that obviously there's an appeal that you listen and you go, well, there's talent here. There's some great songwriters, some great music. But do you think that also when you're connecting and you're understanding their background, their story, their narrative, and also the, you know, they're from the same area and similar sort of backgrounds that you can relate to, that would also be something that makes you more passionate as well because you've got that sort of that context?
Definitely. And that's where I think, again, that South Australians should like South Australian music. Yep. Just because it's South Australian.
Yeah.
I think that there is a lot of that shared experience. Yep. Of living here and going through similar things. Don't get me wrong, a lot of the vast majority of... No, I don't want to say that. Anyway... but I think that we do inherently share things, you know. Yeah. Looking at West Theberden as an example, you know, I remember going to Big Sound a couple of years ago and they played on that outdoor stage out in the car park, 500 people playing. It was just that perfect moment of Big Sound where for some reason, everyone decided that was the gig they wanted to be at. The sun just went down at the perfect time. The lights kicked in at the perfect time. The sound was perfect. And I watched 500 Brisbaneites screaming along Adelaide suburb names to their song Moving Out. It was just, it blew my mind that to me, you know, I know them. I've been to all of those places.
Yeah.
And that's something that's really special to me. I think there really is a very strong community in Adelaide because for a very, very long time, no one broke through.
Mm.
No one really got anywhere. As far as I'm concerned, the Hilltop Hoods are the only band from Adelaide who are an Adelaide band who's truly made it. We've got names like Sia, was from Adelaide.
Mm.
She kicked around. She was in an acid jazz band for 10, 15 years. She moved overseas 10 years before she broke it big.
Mm.
And I still hear her name brought up as a great South Australian artist. I think Sia is a perfect example of the failures of the South Australian music industry to support our incredible artists. We've only
acknowledged once she's become...
That's right. Yeah. Again, Cold Chisel. People always talk about Cold Chisel.
Yeah.
They were a cover band until they moved to Sydney. Yeah. And then they started getting to write their own songs. So there's this history that we talk about of these great artists coming from Adelaide, but none of them really got to be an artist while they were here. So I think the Hilltop Hoods are, for me, the first act that really became successful and remained as being an Adelaide band.
Well, I assume, like, when you talk about that, you're talking about bands that are getting into that national and even global sort of recognition. Because, look, one band that I'm always sort of very close to is Truth Corroded.
Yep.
Metal band here, very ingrained in the scene here. They've done a lot of international touring. They've been releasing albums for, the guys are probably going to kick me when I get this wrong, but at least the last 25 years, maybe, I'd be very close. They've been around the traps for a bit. Now,
I'm definitely talking mainstream.
Yeah, I guess it's a case of it was a definition of success, of course, but yeah. But also I think just those other examples. Yeah, we're definitely talking about that next tier up where you've got basically national heroes of some sort, and then globally really making a massive impact as well. So yeah, absolutely.
I think even from the perspective of a South Australian, I could walk down the street and ask 100 people if they've heard of Hilltop Hoods, and they'd probably say yes.
Yep.
Truth Corroded, probably no.
Yep.
And I think they should have. I think they should know Truth Corroded.
Yeah.
And again, there's so many other South Australian bands that have that quality. Yeah. And even those who do have international success. We've got a few South Australian singer-songwriters that are doing really great things. Tom West has done a lot of work in Nashville in particular recently, and New York, I think. Very recently, he's going to be at South by next year. And there's a local guy named Garner Cronin,
okay,
who for the last few years has flown to Europe in the middle of the year and done about 60 shows in about 60 days. And he did a year or two of doing that on his own. And then he got to the point where he was able to take a South Australian backing band on that trip with him as well, because Germany in particular really loves what he does. And that, again, I could walk down the street and no one in South Australia would have heard of him. I think that there's a lot of positives happening in the industry at the moment that are encouraging or making it potentially possible for people to still be based here while having that overseas success. Yeah. But at the same time, I think those people are one very good phone call away from jumping on a plane and not coming back. Which I can't blame them for, you know.
No, not at all. I've been doing another podcast, and I've stopped it for the time being, but it's called Self Starter, and it's just all about people starting their own businesses or being freelancers and things like that. And so just a wide range of different backgrounds, industries, et cetera. And I've always spoken about, and the whole beginning of that podcast stemmed from me at the time living in a regional area and sort of looking at what the general storylines were in the area. And it's all about lack of opportunity, lack of jobs, industries dying, you know, and then automation kicking in, all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, you got NBN. And if anything, your internet connection is faster than it is in Metro Sydney. You can do anything. Yeah. Like, and or on the other end of the spectrum, you can go and mow lawns, you know. Everyone needs the same stuff. So I sort of look at music now as like, you know, you get your meccas. You got Nashville, and you've got London, New York, LA. I mean, even here, Melbourne's always seen as the Australian mecca of music, live music, great culture there, a lot of opportunity. But I think now the fact that you can record anywhere, you know, the overheads to set up your own recording is virtually nothing in comparison to what it used to be. The opportunities are endless. I mean, that also causes other concerns as far as a lot of noise out there and a lot of stuff that you have to get through. But I sort of look at it and go, it's exciting because Adelaide could be a Nashville, you know. I'm just trying, like, Broome could be a Nashville, you know. There's still people up there, but they could create their own scene, and it could be an attractive place for people to come. And it doesn't matter where you are. Like, now it's you're not limited to a finite number of places that are allowing you opportunities.
In the city of Adelaide in particular, I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head, but I should, but they have a 10 gigabit network that you can connect to, an internet, really? 10 gigabit internet connection that offices in the city can connect. And it's like, it's cheap too. It's specifically been built. It's a state government, Adelaide City Council project to make this sort of thing happen, to make that sort of thing viable. And they actually launched it by having, I think it was a string quartet playing in four separate spaces, but playing together.
Oh, well.
So having the video conferencing happening, which is one of those things where video still doesn't necessarily need 10 fucking gigabit of bandwidth to push through, but trying to come up with other examples of a way to do that. But to do that, and to do that with very high quality audio, for them to play simultaneously and hear each other in real time as if they were next to each other. So yeah, Adelaide could absolutely be that place. And we hear constantly that I feel like housing prices here are ridiculous, but I know they're nothing they're compared to Melbourne and Sydney. So there could very well be an attraction for creatives to come into this space and start using these connections and that potentially cheaper rent. One of the things, and I'd like to hear from your perspective, one of the things that I feel that Adelaide is lacking is producers, people who can hear your song and go, yep, but we need to do this, this, and this to make it really tighter or poppier or whatever. There's a particular guy named Mario Spate in Adelaide. Talking about going on side tangents, let me go on a tangent about Mario Spate. The first local band I ever saw, I was 17 years old, and my friend said, my other mate's playing in a band, we should go. And he would drive everywhere, and well, we were underage, so we weren't drinking anyway, but we were smoking cigarettes, however we got them. And of course, it was an excuse to get out of the house so we could get away with smoking. So we'd go to these gigs where they were $5, $10 or free, stand in a beer garden and watch our friend play. And the first time I saw this band, that was the moment for me. 17 years old, the first Adelaide band I ever saw, and I went, holy shit, this band is amazing. Why aren't they massive? Why doesn't everyone know about this? They're in our own backyard. Why aren't we talking about this stuff? I think it's purely coincidental that the first band that I saw happened to have Mario Spate in it, because he is an incredible artist, an incredible producer. There are a hell of a lot of South Australian artists that have started getting Triple J play that he's produced their tracks, or at least produced their first early tracks, that have started getting that national attention. TK Meidzer, he worked with, I should be able to name heaps more off the top of my head, but I can't right now. But he in particular, is the only person I can think of off the top of my head where if someone came to me and said, we've got this song, we want to workshop it with someone, we want to make it better, I would say, you go speak to Mario. Mm. If he goes, fuck it, I'm moving to Berlin, there is a huge hole in the South Australian industry for any artist who's coming up and doing stuff. But from a metal perspective, do you typically work with someone doing that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because I love the idea of a producer who would take what you've created and get the best out of it.
Yep.
And I mean, so the band I'm in is a bit of an exception because our front guy, Tim, singer, guitarist, he was a founder of the band, and over the years he's developed a talent where he has his own recording studio and he does everything in-house. We're so lucky.
Yeah.
We save so much money.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. And so he more or less produces our own music and his own music, so it sort of sits all in-house. It's very sort of, that's not the right word, but it's ancestral in the sense that it stays within the ranks. But look, I know a few people that are producers, but I'm not really familiar to the level of involvement that they get with the artist. And I think probably I could be wrong, and I'm sure like there'll be mates of mine listening who might say otherwise. But I think especially in the last 10 years or so, maybe a bit longer, we've definitely transitioned more into that DIY phase.
Yep.
And that's fantastic. But I think it also paints a false picture of what the potential is, because I think, I mean, we've always prided ourselves on being a DIY band where we're very independent. We do everything ourselves. We self-release. Sometimes we hate ourselves for it, but we know that the returns are worth it. We control all of our music, and there's a whole bunch of reasons. However, that romantic vibe around DIY can sometimes shoot you in the foot as well.
For sure.
You're so stubborn. You know, it's my music. I'm going to control it. I'm going to do everything. I'm going to, you know, some of those guys who are multi-talented talented in a whole range of different instruments. I'm going to record everything myself. I'm just going to self-produce it, and put it out there. And there's that romantic sort of a approach where it's like, yeah, DIY, independent musicians, that's fantastic, blah, blah, we're going to support that. But you're also limited. And I always look at business and a lot of the sort of entrepreneurs and people out there, and they talk about, you know, surrounding yourself with expertise, and you can't rely on just your own skill set to be able to be successful. You have to get talented people around you, and you can't, and no one expects you to know everything.
Mm.
You can't be good at everything. It's realistic to be good at a particular thing, and then when you want other things, you bring the talent in to help you. And I think producing is really important, and maybe there's some, like, I know a few metal producers, but I just don't know to what extent they get involved. So it's probably something that, and the fact that I don't know that probably means it just doesn't get discussed enough.
Yeah.
And maybe it's something that needs to be focused on more, because I definitely know, like, if you look at pop music,
that's
fundamental.
Yeah.
You know, you've got guys in there that are tailoring these songs to ensure that they succeed.
They've got to make sure that hook hits where it needs to hit.
That's it. And there's a science to it, you know, and they've got to make it work. So it's an interesting thing that you said, because obviously depending on the genre of music and the style of music, and especially when you're talking about bands and artists that are getting into that national mainstream level, you need those people in there. So as you said, if this guy goes,
that's it.
Big gap.
Yep. So there's, and like, you know, I don't expect you to know, every South Australian artist, especially pop artists,
don't test me.
I would mention, but you know, there's some names that people would know, and some that have gotten spot rotation or whatever. But people like Main and Wing Defense, Stelly is a new young lady, incredible songs. Again, Mario's working with her. People who are still slightly more emerging, or Diaspora is an incredible personality in the South Australian music scene.
Mm.
He's a young guy from South Sudan. He must be 6'6", and he makes you feel like you're the only one in the room.
Yeah.
He walks in the room and he owns the room, and he can be surrounded by 20 of his mates, but when he's talking to you, you feel like you're the only one in the room. Yeah, cool. He's such a bright and connective presence, and an incredible rapper, an incredible lyricist, and again, I believe he's done work with Mario. He also runs a record label or collective. Sorry, Diaspora runs this collective called Playback 808, which includes Elsie Wameo. Again, she's worked with Mario Spate. Ocean Eyes, another young artist who's come through this organization in the northern suburbs called Northern Sound System, where I think Mario's gone in and done a lot of work with these young people. Mm. And it feels like there's, to go on a further tangent, there's an initiative run by the Music Development Office, which is a state government department, called the Stigwood Fellowship. So every year, five artists get some money and some mentorship to help them through the next level. The first year, I think, was TK Meidzer, Bad Dreams, Wes Thebberden, Luke Millian, and Jesse Davidson. And they all absolutely went to the next level after they'd been through this program. And there's been a whole bunch of artists that have come through since. And in the last couple of years, it started feeling like everyone who's coming through that has gone through Northern Sound System and worked with Mario and, you know, polished what they were doing to the point now it's ready. And it's ready for something that can take it to the next step. Sorry, that was a tangent.
No, go for it. it's a fascinating thing, because it's another, I mean, we're talking about music, we're talking about original music, we're talking about Australian music, and in particular, you know, South Australian music. But I think there's certain aspects of this where, especially, like, I'm always coming from what I know and that sort of, that metal background. And I think sometimes maybe from our side of the fence, we do ourselves a disservice, because there's a level of stubbornness to what we do. Mm. And I think that sort of fits in with the identity sometimes, where I think ultimately we're pretty open-minded, but we don't like to show it. And and so that means, as far as sharing ideas or seeking out feedback or outside criticism, like constructive criticism, it's not often encouraged or sought after. And so that's a really hard thing. So even to hear, and there's heaps of great music programs out there, and I think so, like, the one that I'm aware of, and I know there's quite a few that have been popping up, but I guess into that rock and metal space in Adelaide is is ARMI, Australian Rock and Metal Institute, old Christian and Connie, if that's and they're fantastic. I've had Christian on the podcast, but you know, I mean, that's a different thing altogether.
Yeah.
But in the end, it's still a group of people that are doing something to nurture, support, guide people to make sound decisions when it comes to music, whether it be songwriting, performance, or just learning how to play your instrument, whatever it might be. And I think that stuff gets overlooked quite a bit.
There's an organization that I think they're all independent from each other, and it has existed around the world for some time and in other states as well. But just last year, the Adelaide branch of Girls Rock launched their first thing. I don't know if you're familiar with this organization at all. So they run a week-long camp for female trans non-binary identifying young people. I think 10 to 17 is the age bracket. And you don't have to know... You don't have to have any instrument experience or singing experience or whatever. I think they took through about 30 kids, and you split up into groups and you make a band, you write a song, and you learn how to do t-shirt screen printing and design your logo and stuff. And then at the end of it, you have a performance. So it was down at the Adelaide Uni Bar on a Saturday afternoon or something. And my wife and I went there, and we got there as the first band was doing their song. And I feel like all of them were actually under 10.
They were
really, really young girls. And the song was called Man, I Love My Brother. And it was just these young girls on stage, and everyone, anytime anyone was performing, you could hear a pin drop. And as soon as they finished, everyone went nuts just cheered. And it was just everyone's family and friends. But there were so many parts of the day where, you know, there was a girl who got on stage and was clearly uncomfortable being in front of people, felt like she wasn't comfortable in her own body. And then she started singing, and you could feel everyone go, holy fuck, where did that voice come from? And 5 seconds later, you could see it on her face of going, actually, I'm pretty good at this.
Yeah.
And she didn't just feel comfortable in her own skin from then on. She felt proud of herself for possibly the first time in her life, or the first time in a very long time. There was a girl who halfway through the song did a spoken word part and came out as bisexual in front of 500 people, in front of her family and 500, and everyone went fucking nuts and cheered and clapped. And I went to my friend afterwards, who was one of the coordinators or the directors, and I just said, like, you've saved lives. There's 30 people up here who, you know, there was gay, trans, non-binary, LGBTIQ plus people on stage. And we know that like 50% of them will attempt suicide at some point. Well, here's a whole bunch of them that I have seen them go, this is okay now. I feel like I'm okay to be me from this 5-day camp. That's all it took to have that moment running through that. So that on the music side of things, I think that's the most important organization that I've seen in the 20 years that I've been looking at this stuff.
It's a massive thing. I mean, I've grown up in rural Queensland in the middle of bloody nowhere.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky my parents moved me back to sort of metropolitan areas growing up. But I, you know, just watching, I mean, it happens everywhere. It's not just in rural areas, but when you lack the outlets and the opportunities to do things, and also having, it's not just the like-minded people around you, but just being able to sort of be encouraged to be yourself or have the outlet to express yourself. It's not only stifling, but it's basically suffocating. And as you said, like those particular people, all of them at some point have made that attempt. They've done something that's with the intention of ending it.
Mm.
And that's pretty intense. I mean, and I've always, you know, I just remember, like, you know, parents or friends' parents or whatever, and they talk about, you know, drinking drugs, and they'd be like, oh, well, the only reason they do it is because they've got nothing better to do, you know?
Yeah.
They're all bored, you know? Yeah. And you always just like in one ear, out the other, and you're like, oh, well, that's what they say. And now I'm thinking, well, yeah, a bit of it's that, but it's not just destructive stuff about being destructive to other people and being a nuisance or whatever. It's destructive internally, you know? And if you don't have those outlets, you don't have those opportunities, whether it be boredom or whether it be just frustration that you can't reach out to anybody, it's absolutely, I mean, I'm just trying to think of another word of destructive, but it's just destructive. It's yeah. insane. Yeah.
I think about it a lot. There's you know the English band The Streets?
Yes.
And there's a line in one of their songs, and I think it's just the opening line, and he just says, geezers need excitement. If their lives don't provide them this, they incite violence. Common sense, simple common sense. And I think about it all the time, walking down Hindley Street at a nightclub, you know, at 1 a.m. on a Saturday night or something, and just imagining that if people don't have that, they get bored, and they eventually, there's a damn good chance it gets destructive.
Yep. Yep, definitely. It's and I think that's why, you know, obviously music's very important in, like, I know a lot of people that are like, oh, well, yeah, I like listening to music, but I haven't got a musical bone in my body and things like that. And I think the really cool thing is that a lot of these programs that are out there, and as you said before, like, you know, they're bringing people in that might not have any sort of, I shouldn't say talent, but they haven't been exposed to even create talent. So they haven't picked up an instrument, haven't done anything, haven't sung before. But you're giving them the tools to be able to go, hey, give it a go. Just it's like getting out there and playing a sport, you know. I want to get you down on the field on a Saturday morning and play, I don't know, rugby or soccer or whatever it might be. It's the same sort of thing. It's just like, get out there, pick up an instrument, or get in front of a mic and just make some noises and see what happens.
And I think, you know, that's a huge part of that is doing something yourself and doing something for yourself, whether that's learning an instrument or playing a sport, getting some exercise. But, you know, the other part of that is being part of a team, being part of a collective and working towards a common goal. And then the other part of the community aspect of meeting new people and meeting like-minded people and having different conversations from what you would normally have any other day. I've been mostly working from home for pretty much the last 6 months, and it took me a very long time to realize I was going crazy.
Cabin fever.
I would work from home, just me and the dogs, and then my wife would come home and I'd hang out with my wife and chat to my wife, and then we'd go to sleep, and then she'd go to work, and then I'd be alone again. And I had a co-working space in the city that I was using, but I was going there plugging my headphones in, tapping away on my laptop going, geez, my back hurts, I need to go do something other than sit at a desk on my laptop, but still not talk to anyone.
Yeah.
And just that simple, I honestly feel like a huge influencer on depression is not vibrating your vocal cords. That specific scientific thing, not even necessarily the communication, but actually talking, makes such a huge difference. Going on a different tangent, but something that you touched on before on the heavy metal side, I'm constantly reminded, and I constantly love the fact that to most people see heavy music as being aggressive, as being mostly aggressive, really. But I've always consistently found that people, particularly in metal, but in heavy music in general, are always so community-minded and so passionate and so friendly and so intelligent, that just completely goes against that stigma and that assumption. And I think, you know, you mentioned in Adelaide, that's the thing that you find here. And it's so very easy for those scenes to exist over in a corner somewhere and not have anyone know about it, but still be supporting each other and doing really great things.
It's a massive thing to be able to talk to and interact with people. And even if you've got a little niche community, you're still so open and so excited to bring people in. And when someone shows an interest, it's like, oh yeah, come in, like have a look, oh, check out this band. And then suddenly that other person's probably regretting it, going, oh, please stop talking my ear off. Yeah. But, you know, it's an excitement. I think it's just a human thing. And as you said, I've never heard anybody actually say that,
yeah.
that vibration of the old vocal cords. But, you know, it makes sense, you know, yeah. and I think everybody needs, I've heard the community aspect of it. And I think that's a very important thing that people need. And as soon as you feel isolated in some form of way, and I'm one of those people that I'm happy to not interact with anybody for a week or two and just be getting on with life and doing things and planning and scheming and strategizing, yeah. all these sort of things. But eventually I get a bit crazy and I have to go and meet up with somebody. I have to do something. I have to make some noise some way or another. But yeah, it's one of those really important things where I think it's not a validation, but I think people just need to feel that they know they exist. Sounds very extreme when you say it like that.
People need to feel heard.
Yeah.
And I think that's the overarching part of it. But again, I still feel like there's that underneath thing of you can kind of fool your body into feeling like you're being heard if you vibrate your vocal cords.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay, so all this stuff and making that focus, that decision to sort of go, okay, well, I'm gonna learn and immerse myself in the music and everything. What have you done with it? Segue.
So yeah. I probably should have started with a more of an overarching backstory. Back when we used to have Street Press in Adelaide, Rip It Up magazine.
Yeah.
I remember opening it up to a page that basically said, do you want to work in the music industry? Come talk to us at Music SA. And so I got in touch with them and they had a bunch of short courses that you could go through. So I went through everything that they had and met all of them, met lots of people there. There's also an organization in North Adelaide called Karklu, which is specifically for young people. And they had a program that would go for a few months where you'd be a part of organizing a bunch of events. Okay. And then some people would be on the merch desk, some people would be emceeing or stage managing or whatever, and you get experience across all of that. I started managing a band in there for a while. It was a boy and a girl, and they met on MySpace and they fell in love over MSN Messenger. And they
really throwbacks.
They made the most catchy and incredibly produced DIY art pop stuff. And again, I just thought they were amazing. And through one of these courses I was doing, I got them to play a show. And then I think the show we did might have been my birthday. So I learned very quickly that, all right, if you make it your birthday, then everyone has to come, then you sell more tickets. But I don't think I actually had a role on the night. So I just had a few beers. And then as soon as that band finished, I just grabbed their CDs off the merch desk and went to all of my friends who looked like they had a good time and said $10 and sold all of their CDs and went to the band and said, here's a bunch of money. And they're like, oh, no, we already got paid for the gig. Like, no, it's, I sold your CDs. They went, maybe you should be our manager. So I worked with them through their first EP release and launch and did a few other bits and pieces. They actually had a song used on a couple of ads.
Okay.
So I got some funding through that, which made a lot of things easier. Unfortunately, they broke up. So I don't manage a band anymore. But, you know, learned a hell of a lot through that around what the local industry looks like, what opportunities there are and what the venues are. I started a blog about the local music scene. That turned into a podcast about the local music scene. Extremely heavily, completely ripping off Dom Alessio's Unearthed Five.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, cool.
I just picked five South Australian bands. I said something about them and I played the song. And I figured, hey, podcasts are a cool thing. I can convince my friends to push the subscribe button and then they'll get this file on their phone and they might listen to it. And if they do, when I say the Honey Pies are playing at the Cranker, we should go, they might say, I heard them on your podcast. I liked it. Let's go. It didn't really ever happen, but, you know. sometimes, you know,
yeah.
Every now and then one of my mates would be like, oh, yeah, I did hear that song. I did like that. But that was a really great experience, especially when South Australian bands started approaching me. And it would be, I would discover a band because they've sent me their song.
Cool.
And it was really good. And it would just be like, how are you coming to me in this way? How am I not hearing about you from someone else? What are you doing here? And I think that's where I kind of started to see the gaps in the industry locally. That, you know, we didn't really have much by the way of publicity around here. But also there's some really severe generational knowledge loss in South Australia. By the time you get to being at a certain level, you start realizing what your press kit should look like, how to approach people, how to tell people that you've got a gig on, how to talk to media, all that kind of stuff. And then you kind of hit the wall and you just give up. And then the next one comes up and they all have to learn that themselves again. And it just keeps happening. It's a constant wave. So that's something that I've definitely tried to work with bands a bit more to go, hey, it is absolutely fine for you to email a community radio station and just say, I'm playing at the Grace Emily in a month's time. Can you let your producers know, your presenters know? And here's a link to my song if you need it, but I know it's already in your library, but just do that.
Yep.
And you'll probably get played a bit more and get a few mentions. It's that simple. That's how we start building more stuff, getting more people out to gigs. So I did the podcast for a fair while. I also knew that I was doing this without the permission of the artists and that I technically shouldn't be. No one ever complained in the, I did just over 50 episodes. So I think there was 150 different bands that I featured in it. And it was starting to get to like 100 downloads a week or per episode. But then I also started just seeing weird stuff like episode 19 got another 20 downloads this week and another 20 downloads this week and another 10 today and 10 today. And just like that's something weird. So I didn't, that made me stop believing the numbers.
Yeah. Okay.
But I was doing the podcast for a while and then thought I should learn how to do this better. There's a community radio station called Radio Adelaide.
Yep.
And they had a course about learning to do radio. So I approached them and went through their course. And there was a guy doing a Tuesday night local music show who was someone that I knew fairly well in the local music scene. I think he said that he'd been doing the show for 7 years at that point, and he'd never mentioned it to me before. And I just went, like, are you proud of your work here? Or you know, are you really enjoying celebrating local music? But it's also a thing that happens in community radio. You know, you do it for long enough, you just kind of forget that you need to keep telling people about it. But he was leaving. So I basically came out of training and took over that program where we had a band come in every week to perform live and have an interview.
Yep.
So I was extremely lucky that there was an established setup of experienced sound techs who did the show after us. So they would come in early to mix the band and it all just kind of worked. I didn't have to set that up. It was extremely lucky for me. But also soon after that, there was some more changes and they said, hey, do you want to make this a 2-hour show instead of a 1-hour show? So I started doing a bit more of including interviews mostly with industry people about opportunities. So it might be Music SA, it might be was Arts SA, that's now the Music Development Office, might be a politician about what they're up to, but really focusing on making something that could help artists get a better idea of what's happening in the scene around them. I also, in that time, in order to book bands, I would basically see who's got a gig coming up and go, cool, you're playing at the Gov on the 1st of August. Do you want to come in late July or, you know, the week of on that Tuesday night? So we're just doing it purely to promote your show, which was also a thing that wasn't heaps happening. You know, people, even I did that for 3 years every week and it's still, I probably only got a handful of bands actually coming to me and going, hey, can we play on this date? Because we've got our launch coming up. So a lot of that, again, for me, was educating artists of this is a thing that you can do to help promote it. I have no idea how many people are listening. It's an FM radio station. We just do it and hope. But it's something, you know, it's better than not bloody doing it. And that, again, you know, in those days, bands like Horror My Friend, Bad Dreams, West Thebodon, there's a band called the Shaolin Afronauts.
No, I haven't heard of them. Sound intriguing.
It's led by a guy named Ross McHenry. He's a jazz bass player. And the Afronauts play Afrobeat music, which I still, however old I am and however long I've been in love with music, I barely understand music, let alone jazz structures, let alone Afrobeat structures of songs, and how that possibly works at all. But it's this band that they have different formations. I think normally somewhere between 7 to 14, 16 members on stage at a time.
Wow.
Kind of mostly jamming around some structure that Ross has put together. But they all have these incredible cloaks on that I think Ross's mum made or something. And I reckon they wore them when they came in to perform live on the radio as well. That the other thing that I was extremely lucky of, the studio that we had was probably about the size of this room.
Mm.
So we could fit in these stupidly huge bands and get them in to perform and to promote what they do. Somewhere in there, I also got a part-time role at the radio station managing the music library.
Yep.
So I also started to be the person who received all of the press releases from all of the publicists interstate.
Bit of an eye-opener.
Yeah. But especially an eye-opener from the fact that 99% of the emails I got were about an interstate band. Probably more than, like almost 100%, seriously. And again, just going, all right, there's something missing here in the South Australian music scene that, and for the most part, I think it's that Triple J does such an incredible branding for Unearthed that people want to put their stuff on Unearthed and get on Unearthed. And they don't even know that these radio stations exist or these other outlets exist because they and we at the time weren't doing any marketing, to be honest.
Yeah.
Any pushing of the brand to let people know these are opportunities, these are things that you can do. So that was a real eye-opener for me, seeing these standard simple structures. For me, I could just see it straight away and go, that's MailChimp. I can see that's the standard newsletter format and I know how you run all of that and no one in Adelaide's doing this. Worked there for a while. Some major changes happened at the radio station. So it was part of the University of Adelaide. The university decided they didn't want to fund it anymore, went through this ridiculous transition that resulted in a new manager coming on board who said, I really like our breakfast show, but I feel, and I want to do a sports show at midday, but I feel like the jazz and classical programming we have Monday to Friday from 9 to 12 won't really fit in with that. So what else do you think we should do? I'm like, new Australian music.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I can do it. Yep, for sure.
Quick, jump in.
Yep. This is it. Heaps of local stuff. Who's playing in Adelaide soon? He's just like, sounds good, man. Go do it. So I did that from 9 till 12 for 12 months.
Wow.
5 days a week. And that, again, was even more eye-opening of going. I was picking about 40 songs a day from different artists. Most of them were playing in Adelaide soon and just had no coverage anywhere else in any other media outlet in South Australia. So this was 2016, 2017, I think. So the street press had disappeared. Most of our blogs had faded away because, of course, they're run by 19-year-olds for a couple of years until they get bored of not being able to pay for it. And then, again, that generational knowledge is lost of anything that
That's
they
right,
learned
start
about
from scratch,
potential yeah. opportunities. And the next 19-year-old comes along to try and do something. So just recognizing that there is that much good stuff coming through, coming and playing at these venues in town, and probably struggling to pull numbers for the most part because there's nowhere for people to hear their music and hear where it's coming from. So I did that for a long time, but then, of course, funding from the university after the transition period started running out and almost all the staff were made redundant. So I did have this idea tickling along in the back of my mind for a long time of setting up an internet radio station. So taking what I was doing with that daily show and making it a 24/7 thing, but trying to work out how commercial radio stations run in an automated way and how I could do that with new Australian music, with South Australian music, with who's coming to play in Adelaide soon, and including automated announcements. And then things like, you know, doing an interview every week and podcasting it, but then putting that into the rotation so that it would play. If you're listening at midday on a Monday, then you know you're going to hear an artist interview. And starting to build more stuff around that. So I started putting that together and I launched a crowdfunding campaign in June 2018 and raised $15,000 to help cover the music licensing costs, which are massive. And set it all up. So that's been running now for 18 months, taking heaps of my time. And I'm starting to get to the point of going, I know where I need to go with this in order to get more support, but it needs more time and I can't possibly give any more time. And I don't want to ask anyone else to work for free.
Hmm.
So I'm not sure.
At the crossroads at the moment.
Yeah, definitely.
And so this is play, pause, play.
That's right.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Well, going back to what we were saying before about producers and surrounding yourself with talent, I mean, maybe it's, I've been through the same thing. Like I've always got all these great ideas, all these different paths I could go down to build things, build these great concepts that are in my head. But then I think, well, I've actually got no money.
Yeah.
So, what incentive would anybody have apart from just having a warm and fuzzy feeling that they're just helping somebody out? Because ultimately people need to be, people do need to be compensated for what they do, but it's not always a transactional thing as well. So like hearing that, you're sort of at this crossroads now. It's like, well, geez, like what do I do? Definitely want to keep this going and expand it. It's definitely a challenge. So, anybody listening, you want
to? Well, I did another crowdfunding in 2019, raised about the same amount of money again.
Yeah, cool. Wow.
Like support's there. There's 3,500 downloads of the app. However many hundred supporters. It's just like the hustle to get that 15K.
Big.
And then most of it goes on expenses.
Yeah.
So I still need to pay the rent.
Yeah.
And if I need to get a job, then I can't spend the time to make the thing that makes it worthwhile, that makes it worth people putting money into, then it's a catch 22.
It's a tough thing. I think music in general, but music in Australia, especially original music, you've got your 1%ers, and they're the guys that are making good money.
Yep.
And then we sort of all fall off after that. And, it's varying. I think there are bands out there that are very smart. They've built a system in place where they've got sort of this reoccurring revenue that's coming in. They've got various revenue streams coming in. But there's a lot, I mean, no matter what end of the spectrum you're on, there's massive sacrifice involved.
Mm.
And, whether that be upskilling yourself so you're multi-talented so you can bring in those different revenue streams. If you're looking at a traditional band, I've seen bands that they will go off on tour for 4 to 8 weeks, and they're doing afternoon like guitar lessons and vocal lessons with fans or whatever, or they're doing Skype lessons and things like that. And obviously, there's all the meet and greet sort of stuff that's been pretty popular over the past several years. But bands now, like even I know quite a few. Musicians that have lent into artist management now because still be the musician just to create them their own branding and in the hope that they can just do it full time, and so it's massive. Like it's like trying to step over that gorge, to get to the other side and go, well, what do I need to do? Because there's a big bloody hole there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I've got enough stretch to get over to the other side just yet. And where do I get the help? And it's a big thing. And especially, I mean, for you to, I think it's amazing that you've been able to do, well, a crowdfunding campaign, but to do a couple of them and had them successful, and to be able to go from an idea and a concept in your head, and it's a real thing. It's functioning. It's alive. Yeah, and
it is. I do need to kind of step back and look at it again every now and then. So one of the things that I've done is a countdown of the top local artists for the year. Which I started doing at Radio Adelaide when we got a new playout system and a new website, and I kind of went, oh, hey, everyone is uploading their playlists. And I went to the web developers and asked them if I could pull a report of all the playlists so that we could send it off for the music licensing reports. Yep. Well, what if I just did that for the whole year and tallied up who our most played South Australian artists are, and then we could do that, because that would be interesting. Yeah. So I did that at Radio Adelaide for a couple of years. And then now through Play, Pause, Play, it's been a public voted countdown.
Yeah, yeah, cool.
So the first year was about 1,100 votes. 2019 was 1,380 something public votes. That's mixed in and weighted against who's actually been played on the radio and who's actually been heard on the radio, to come up with the top 50 South Australian artists for the year. And then one of the big things for me is going out to the artists and asking them to record an intro before their song gets played, so that it's as little of my voice as possible and you're really just hearing the artists. And it's a very simple, tell us what you've done this year, tell us what you're doing next year, tell us something about this song. And it's such a beautiful, easy to listen to format.
Yep.
When you're not familiar with any of the songs at all. So one of the big things for me was getting people to vote, ideally signing them up to the mailing list. But chances are everyone in Adelaide knows someone who's in a local band, but they probably don't know any more local bands than that one band.
Mm-hmm.
But if you convince them to vote and then convince them to tune in to see if the band they voted for comes in, there's a damn fair chance they'll find 5, 10, 15, 20 other bands that they'll go, actually, yeah, this is pretty good. And that's the feedback that I've got from people, is going, I had no idea there was this much great South Australian music. I went through a couple of business courses towards the end of 2018. After the successful crowdfunding campaign, I kind of went, you know, I've got such a community vision for where this thing is going. I need to get someone to tell me, cool, man, but think about the money. Where's you've got to make this sustainable. And one of those business courses wound up giving me a scholarship to go to South by Southwest. While I was over there and I was trying to talk to an Australian band, and there was this American dude there who looked at my badge and then said, oh, you work for Play Pause Play? And I just went, is this some weird Yankee conference thing where you pretend to know what I do so you can sell me on what you do? And that was my initial thought in a hundredth of a second, that I just went, yeah, right, come on, mate. And he goes, oh, I loved the Heaps Good 50 countdown. I'm like, is this a joke? What's going on here? Is this dude from Brooklyn? And then he starts going, yeah, man, I discovered so many new South Australian artists through that, Lost Woods and Wolf J and Maine and Wing Defense and blah, 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 blah. And I'm just going, if this band asked me to name 15 South Australian bands right now, I couldn't do it. And here you are doing this. What is this? And it's a guy who lived in Australia for a while, and he just loves countdowns, music countdowns. Yep. That's his thing. He discovered Triple J, discovered the Hottest 100,
yep,
and he had some friends in Adelaide. So he's back in Brooklyn now. He runs a blog over there, and someone told him to tune into this thing.
Wow.
And that for me, that's... Again, every now and then, I need to step back and go, I've kicked some goals here.
Yeah.
Because some of these people could go to this guy in New York and just get advice. You know, it's a very, very easy connection for them to make now that didn't exist before. And it's proving that the quality of music being made here is viable internationally.
It definitely is. I mean, and it's just, it's whether it be limited resources of where people access music, or it's just your own cliques. You know, you only listen to people that have an influence on you.
You have to know about it in order to listen to it. You know, that's actually one of the first things I did before I launched the first crowdfunding campaign. And yes, sorry, I do have to go soon. I put out a survey, and I did a very biased question,
yep,
to get the thing that I knew I wanted, which was basically, you know, do you need to be familiar with a band before you'd buy a ticket to see them live? Like, of course everyone's going to say yes to that. But of course you feel that you do as well, and we can't expect people to buy tickets to someone that they've never heard of before. We all love to think that we would do it, but I still need to have fucking seen a post of them on MySpace back in the day or on Facebook or whatever. I've never ever just gone to the cranker and gone, here's $10, let me see whoever you've got tonight.
Yeah.
Never. So we can't expect anyone to do that. So making it as accessible as possible is the thing for me. And that's the just download the app, open it and press play. And the first thing people say is, oh, but I've got Spotify, why? And I'm like, yeah, but the thing for me was hanging out the washing, doing the dishes and going, oh, I could play some music on my phone right now, and opening Spotify and staring at it going, I don't know.
Oh, man, every time. And the other thing is that, you know, it's the old buzzword, but the algorithms that are attached to Spotify, they're giving you recommendations, but the recommendations are as wide as the globe, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's worldwide. And so, which is fine. It's fantastic. You learn, you discover a lot of music, and they've got their own integrated playlist in there. But I think just taking full circle back to what we're talking about community, it's like there's something so cool. And like, and even talking about Cold Chisel, like for years I hated Cold Chisel. I just never liked it. It was just this bogan music. And like every time anyone I knew that liked Cold Chisel was just the biggest bogan. I just couldn't, oh, it was horrible. And then one day it just clicked.
Yeah.
I think I just paid a bit more attention to the lyrics and I just went, wow, this is so cool. This is like, this is what everybody goes through. It's just, it's relatable stuff. It's community. It's about the good times, the bad times, everything in between. And that's one of the reasons why they're popular. I mean, amazing songwriting, music, musicianship, etc. But it sort of ties in with just the fact that community is so important, and to be like-minded and to be able to relate to somebody next to you is huge. And so, yeah, you can put on Spotify and hear a song that's going to like completely sort of, you know, draw you in, and it might be a short-term thrill, or you discover an artist or a song that's being put together in your backyard, and you've both gone through the same school, or you both walked through the same street, or you've both been in the same area, suburb of town, and you go, wow, like, not only do I relate on a high level, but I actually like relate on a literal level of what you've been through, because I've done that. I've been there. I've been in that setting. I understand the weather or whatever it might be that you're talking about. And so that's why something like that's so cool.
Mm.
So yeah, I mean, kudos to you to do something like that.
Thank you. That's the, you know, I didn't start an internet radio station to start an internet radio station. I started an internet radio station to get people out to gigs, to get more people in South Australia out to gigs in South Australia. And I think that once you tell people there's good stuff being made here and make it easy for them to find it, they'll give it a shot and then they'll go out and buy it. So I did another survey 12 months after I'd launched. And I think 25% of people who said that they'd listened to the station said they discovered an artist through Play Pause Play and bought a ticket to their show.
Perfect.
80% of people did something like buy a ticket or buy some merch or stream them on Spotify later or something. Like, it's a discovery platform. Yep. That's where the value is. You know, I think that it's vitally important for artists to have a potential international reach. But if Spotify recommends to me a dozen artists from Norway and Iceland that I think are the most incredible things ever, then the most likely thing I'm going to do is keep listening to them on Spotify. And that doesn't actually really give them anything. They're probably never going to come to Adelaide. Yeah. They're probably never going to come to Australia, let alone Adelaide, these hypothetical bands. But if Spotify was recommending more South Australian artists, then you could go, oh, actually, they're just playing down the road. Maybe I'll go. Maybe I'll go next time, whatever.
And we'll wrap up now. But I think, we could do this for ages.
I think so.
and we're still on the first beer.
I know.
Luke was so kind to bring a bunch of beers, some local craft brews. And I don't know about you, but I'm still like sort of getting towards the bottom of this first can. But I think the really cool thing about it is that there's such a flow on effect. It's not just about, you know, the things that we spoke about giving people an opportunity to express themselves and outlets, and, you know, mental health's a big thing. Development, you know, people as an individual being able to sort of express themselves and become better people, but the local economy, you know, opportunities becoming a destination for people, not just artists, but for music fans as well. You know, when tours are rolling through, not just having people in the metro area of Adelaide, but people all across South Australia making the effort to come into Adelaide to go and see shows, or it starts to expand across the whole state. I mean, there's a lot of empty space in South Australia, but there's still a lot of towns and a lot of places. So it can just go further.
On the craft beer side of things, so there's a Adelaide Beer and Barbecue Festival in the middle of the year.
Yep.
And they, I don't think they need to go as strong on the music side as they do, but they can, so they do. And they've had some wicked, wicked gigs there. And last year in particular, they ran a Battle of the Bands event, which had four opening rounds at craft breweries.
Yep.
And it just clicked for me of, that's where the future of outside of the city gigs in South Australia is, because when it comes to craft breweries, first of all, mostly they collaborate with each other. Mostly they see the value in supporting each other and raising up the industry as a whole. But also they're really passionate about local and about independent and about supporting those things. And that's exactly what the local music scene is as well. There's such a strong connection there. And also because most of these places would be stoked to get an extra 40 people through the door.
For sure.
And that's when you can, when you start getting an extra 40 people through the door, that's when you can start saying, let's get an extra 100 people. Yeah. And what do we need to do that? But the other thing, sorry, just about the Beer and Barbecue Fest, like the incredible thing about this setup is that they paid the bands to play in the heats, and then they paid the bands to play in the final as well, and then the winner got a grand or something. Like, they did it in incredibly well, and I got to MC again, which was really fun as well.
I think that's a great way to wrap up on Beer and Barbecue. And thank you so much. Like, as I said, I could be chatting to you for ages, and music is a big thing. And anyone who's listened to this podcast knows I crap on quite a bit about music. So, it's cool to meet another person who's just in the thick of it and just really throwing it all out there to try and make it work for other artists. So well done, man. Congrats.
Thank you. Cheers. So great to meet you.
Yeah. Likewise.
Lovely. You can reach out to Luke and learn more about Play Pause Play by going to playpauseplay.com. Play Pause Play and Luke are both on the socials, I believe, on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, if I get that correctly. However, you can just go to the show notes over at andysocial.net or andydowling.net or whatever the hell you're listening to this through right now. You know, whether it be Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. I don't know why I'm rattling all these off, because you're listening to whatever you're listening through right now. So just stab your digits against the screen in the show notes or the description, and you should be able to get through to wherever the hell you want to go. I'll also put links through to the Play Pause Play. That is a tongue twister. Play Pause Play app over at the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store as well, so you can learn a little bit more about what Luke was talking about in this conversation. But a massive thank you to Luke for being a part of the podcast and being ultra patient. I mean, we recorded this episode in January when I was in Adelaide, and we're in May now. So it's been a while. And I tell you what, I banked up a hell of a lot of episodes in Adelaide alone, let alone all the other guests that I've put out so far this year. And it's worked out really well. I mean, at least for me, because with all this coronavirus stuff over the past several weeks or couple of months or however long it's been now, I've lost track of time. It's been great to have a healthy bank of podcast guests sitting there that I can just drip feed out as we go. So it's been really, really good. And it's good to finally get that batch that I recorded back in Adelaide finally out. They're all out there. So go back and have a listen to them all. There were some absolutely great chats with some great people. So I'm just stoked that I've been able to get them all done and get them all out there so you can all enjoy them. Moving forward though, different story. So if you're new to the podcast, last week I changed the format a little bit. So I think last week's episode was Nat's What I Reckon. So that one blew up, far out. So if you're new from Nat, welcome, howdy. You know, thanks for sticking around and listening to another episode. But the way that the podcast is going moving forward is a little bit different. If you scroll through some of the previous episodes, you would see that there were crazy talk episodes in between the guest episodes. And so what I'm doing now is I'm removing the crazy talk episodes. Can't even talk. The crazy talk episodes, and they are going over to Patreon. That's right. I'm on Patreon now, so you can go to patreon.com/AndyDowling. I've got a bunch of legends over there already supporting me. In particular, my $10 social circle, such as Andrew from Perth, Mick G from Sydney, Ash from Deniliquin, and Dan from Dapto. And I'm sure by the time this episode comes out, there'll be a few more legends. So I will be giving you guys shout outs over the coming weeks with more episodes to come. But Patreon's been going really well so far. We're in our early stages, but I've been dedicating the Crazy Talk episodes to the Patreon supporters and doing a whole bunch of other stuff over there as well. So if you're interested and you want to just, even if you just want to throw me a buck a month or something like that, just a little bit of love, a little bit of support, you can definitely go and do that. And it goes a long way to supporting this podcast. Apart from that, the format remains the same. Every Thursday night, 8 p.m., I had to think about that one, 8 p.m. Sydney time, you will have your usual guest episode, and I have a stack of legends coming up. So many great people. Once again, Like I did earlier in the year, I bulk recorded a hell of a lot of episodes over the past couple of weeks. Well, probably a bit longer than that, but I think that's one of the benefits of this coronavirus thing is that the availability of people has been so much better, so much easier. I've been able to pin people down. No excuses. Come and talk to me. And I'm just loaded up. So I've got so many great people to share with you all, some great stories, great conversations. So stick around for that. If you don't already, I don't think I've ever said this, or at least for the last couple of years, subscribe to the podcast. Yeah, why not? Subscribe, follow, all that sort of stuff, and you can keep up to date with the upcoming guests as well. But obviously, if you're on Patreon, you'll get a heads up of what's coming in the Crazy Talk episodes as well. I think that's about it, folks. I'm going to try not to waffle too much, but I clearly have. So thank you so much for listening, and until next week, folks, that's it. All right, take care. Ta-ta. Bye-bye. Larry, please.